How's it going? Hope you've had a superb sporting week. Yep, it's that time of the week again for another installment of your weekly sports podcast. Yep, that's Talking Point, the forum where we engage and debate with our top citizen sports journalists who keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, if you're a regular by now, you'll also know we line up some special guests. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cramer. Oh, to be a sports fan right now, eh? We're stuck in a rugby and cricket World Cup crossover, and then there were four: New Zealand, Argentina, South Africa, and England. It's semi-final week in the Rugby World Cup in France. It's the All Blacks up against Argentina, the Springboks up against England. That's happening on Saturday night. From a South African sports fan's perspective, Super Saturday, we're calling it. The Proteas face England in the Cricket World Cup also on Saturday as well. And it's already into week three of the 50-over Cricket World Cup in India. And that's also dishing up some surprise results, isn't it? Joining me in studio this week, with his rugby cap on as usual, a regular on our show, on the team sheet again this week, for starters, the head of Citizen Sport, Jacques van der Westhuizen. Jacques, great to have you with us as always to share your sporting knowledge with us.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor. It should be a good show today.
And on the Talking Point hotline this week to chat about things cricket, we'll welcome back our perennial all-rounder, senior citizen sports writer Wesley Botten. He'll be joining us shortly. But we'll kick it off with rugby. Now, Jacques, Russie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber have been pretty unpredictable at times with their team selections. They've dished up a few surprises here and there, rotated very intelligently with the incredible squad depth that they've got at their disposal. By and large, horses for courses. Just unpack the Bok team for the semi-final, if you would, Jacques. So however tempting it may have seemed, they've named an unchanged side. Perhaps significant is that eight players in this team started the 2019 World Cup final, hardened veterans. That was also against England in Japan. No injuries. That's a bonus. Don't fix it if it ain't broken, to use an old cliche, Jacques. Your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not at all surprised, really, that they've gone with an unchanged team, Trevor. It's, you know, there was, you know, a lot of speculation in the week and that they would rest a few of the senior guys, bring in some fresh legs and that. But, I mean, let's be honest, it's a semi-final for a World Cup. You don't chop and change just because it's England, who are perceived by many to potentially be a bit weaker than some of the other teams. I mean, if this was a final, I don't think they would have changed anybody. You know, and it's that big. It's a semi-final. It's a must-win match. So, you know, why change? There's no reason to change. That team that played last week was, you know, really on top of the game. The substitutes worked well. That whole match day squad of 23 was, you know, all contributed and they played well. So I think this is the team that they've settled on now for the rest of the tournament. They've got some momentum behind them. They've got a nice rhythm going, and there are no real weaknesses in that side. It's a stunning team. As I said last week, I really like the 5-3 bench. I like those three backline players on the bench. You've got everything, all the bases covered. So, yeah, I'm not that surprised, even though, like I say, Jacques Nienaber and Russie Erasmus threw out some red herrings in the week, you know, bringing Kanan Moody into a press conference, making many people believe there would be certain changes in that, but they've stuck with the guys that did the job for them. And, yeah, may they go on and play well. The only thing, of course, is we don't know what's going to happen if they do win. I mean, is this maybe, you know, a bit of a red herring for the All Blacks, who everybody thinks will win their match? We think we'll win our match. The fans believe that. And then we get to a potential final maybe next week. And then will the Box then revert to a 6-2 bench or a 7-1 bench like they did at Twickenham? In a sense, they're still keeping everybody guessing, but let's not look too far ahead, but stick to this week's match. And, yeah, England, I mean, it's a World Cup semi-final. It won't be easy.
I'm going to backtrack just slightly to last week, Jacques. It was a weekend that left me totally breathless, if I have to say that. Rugby of the highest order, all-out rugby, the four quarterfinals, nothing left out on that field. One just wonders if there's still petrol in the tank this week after a week like last week. Some energy-sapping, draining rugby. Jacques, let's just hone in on the Box first for now. A match worthy of a final against the hosts, France.
Yeah, it was stunning. I mean, I must be honest. Like you say, breathless is the word. You know, we got to halftime and then it was like, wow, you know, let's just breathe now for a little bit, because that was 40 minutes of the highest quality rugby I've watched in a very long time. It was end-to-end, non-stop. And yeah, it just took everybody's breath away, like we say. So fantastic rugby from both teams. I mean, it was just all action and of the highest quality. So a stunning performance, you know, from the Springboks to come back after being going down early on and then being down at halftime, and really, you know, so little between those teams, as we say, between all of those quarterfinalists, very little between them. So high quality rugby. I don't think I've seen four quarterfinal matches like that in a very long time, if ever. I was, you know, shaking towards the end. My heart was pounding. I think most people felt the same way. You know, we were just hoping after going ahead that we wouldn't give away a penalty right at the death or whatever. So, you know, it was really edge of the seat stuff. And yeah, I don't know if the semifinals will live up to that. Hopefully a final does. We don't know what's going to happen in future, but yeah, last weekend was something special.
Another one worthy of a final, Jacques, the All Blacks against Ireland as a neutral. That one also kept me on the edge of my seat for 80-plus minutes. Then Fiji hitting back at England the way they did. Argentina ending Wales' dream run. Just your summary briefly, Jacques. Another black eye, one could say, for Northern Hemisphere rugby, though.
Yeah, that was the talking point going in last week. You know, into these matches, some pundits up north predicted a 4-0 whitewash for the Northern Hemisphere teams. But we all knew it was going to be tight in that. And, you know, it could easily have been 4-0 for the north, and it could just as easily have been 4-0 for the south. In the end, it was 3-1 to the south, with only England progressing. But, you know, those matches, like we said, were so tight and so close. There was really nothing in it. Yeah, the one team obviously that surprised everybody, or has surprised everybody, are the All Blacks. You know, they're a quality outfit, but they haven't had the greatest form over the last 2 years. But they seem to be clicking at the right time again in a World Cup. They would, you know, arguably have the easiest semi-final, if we can put it that way. They should beat Argentina and progress. You know, Argentina making a semi-final is massive for them. I don't think too many people would have predicted that going into the World Cup. So a big one for them. Like I say, I can't see Argentina going further than that. Yeah, and like you said, that match between the All Blacks and Ireland was also of the highest quality, and it could have gone either way. I do have I do feel a little bit for Ireland. I think they've been superb over the last number of years. I think Andy Farrell has really turned them into a mean machine. They've been so consistent and so close again, you know, as was the case with our match. I feel for the French as well. And a number of the players and the coaching teams, you know, you put so much effort in, and it really does come down to one or two kicks and fine margins, as the coaches and players talk about. So, yeah, you know, my prediction, obviously, I know we're going to probably still get there, but I think it will be an All-South final this time again.
Back to the future, the first semi-final. It's a repeat of the 2019 final in Japan, the box of the defending champions. So one would feel they're the ones who would probably be under immense pressure in this instance, although some players claim they enjoy being in that position. We read about it in The Citizen through the week. They certainly answered some big questions against France, did the Springboks. Granted, England have been in the easier half of the draw, but Fiji certainly proved they're very vulnerable at times, but not to be underestimated, of course, under any circumstances.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think even for the coaching team and the players, you know, England have not been great at all over the last, you know, year or two. But they're there in a World Cup semi-final. So it's difficult, I think, for the players and the coaches to really get everybody motivated and amped and that for a match of this magnitude against a team that you just really don't know where they are. You know, Fiji could have knocked them over, really, and it wouldn't have been – it would have been a shock. But, I mean, not too many people would have been all that surprised, because England haven't been so good. So we really don't know at what level they're playing, what standard they're playing. They have been in the weaker side of the draw. And Saturday will tell us, you know, where the Springboks are really at the heart of their game now, at the peak of their powers. And, you know, this will show the world where England really are. So, yeah, difficult one, I think, for the players, because it's not a final. It's not a big, you know, hype match like the French match or whatever. So a tricky one in a sense. And, you know, one of our guys spoke to Heineke Meyer this week, and And he was adamant that the semi-final is almost harder than playing in a final because there's so much pressure to win it. And with that pressure on, your discipline can go, you can make more mistakes or whatever. So, you know, the Springboks are really going to have to be switched on. This England team probably have it in them to knock us over on the day if everything goes according to plan and we make one or two errors. So it's a tricky one.
Just looking at the week that's been, Jacques, the sides have been involved in a massively taxing, energy-sapping clash. We spoke about it last week. There's a six-day turnaround between matches now. Surely it takes its toll on the body. Surely it's energy-sapping, and it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, that is the one thing I think that you know, we have to consider and be you know, be aware of. You know, the France game was hyped up, you know, for weeks, for months, for years. Everybody knew that that quarterfinal was going to be against France or the All Blacks. So it was a big one. The one thing, though, that I think the Springbok management team have done really well, knowing that, is that they've managed the player workload really well. It was an energy-sapping game, and it was mentally and physically draining. But I think, you know, a lot of the guys rested for the Tonga match. The first choice players rested for the Tonga match, and then, you know, when the pool stage is wrapped up in that fourth or fifth week, the Springboks had their bye. So a lot of those guys have had some time off on their feet. They've had time to rest and recover, and you know, the French game was their first big game, let's say, in 3 weeks, which is significant, and now they've got two more to go, hopefully. So there would have been time for those guys to recuperate. The other thing that we also need to bear in mind is that the Springbok management change guys quite early in a game. They make those substitutions almost immediately after half time. So a guy like Sia Kulisi, Amani Libok, you know, Kubus Reiner, some of the front row, or all of the front row, don't even play close to 80 minutes in a match. They're playing 45 minutes, 50 minutes at the most. It's not like in the old days where you end up playing 70 minutes, 75 minutes, and then all of a sudden the coach decides, well, I'm going to send on a prop for the last 5 minutes, or a hooker for that matter. So it is energy sapping. Some guys handle it better than others. A guy like Franco Mostert will go for 80 minutes for 10 weeks in a row if he had to, and he enjoys that. You know. So other guys will need a bit of a break. So I think the way the Springboks have under Rossi and Jacques, how they've been able to manage the players over the last number of years is important to bear in mind. These guys are not playing 80-minute matches every week. So I think they're still probably fairly fresh. And then obviously it also depends on what happens in the week of training. At this stage of a World Cup, I don't think training sessions are nearly as intense as they were maybe pre-World Cup build-up and that sort of thing. So I think we're going to be okay.
Before we call full-time on our rugby discussion, Jacques, you've made your predictions. You said you think it's going to be an all-Southern Hemisphere final. I'm not going to ask you as tradition to make predictions again because there's always the head versus heart debate when the boxer involved. I'm going to ask you to put yourself in Rossie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber's shoes in this instance. They always seem so calm. What do you feel is going through their collective rugby brains right now?
I think just, to be honest, I think a lot of excitement. You know, they're two matches away from going back to back. And that's exactly what they set out to do when they, you know, became head coaches and directors of rugby in 2018. Springbok rugby was in the doldrums. We needed somebody to come and save the team in a sense. And Rossi and Nienaber both came back from Ireland. They joined the Springbok setup in 2018, beginning of 2018. A year or two later, we won the World Cup. And we're on the verge of doing it again. You know, we're two matches away. I think there's a massive amount of excitement and energy in that team. I think all the things that they really wanted to achieve over the last 5-6 years, you know, are there in place. They wanted to build squad depth. They wanted to build experience. And they wanted to give themselves the best shot of winning the World Cup now. Like we've often said, 2019 was almost a bonus because it happened within 2 years of them taking charge. They had always earmarked this World Cup as the one that they wanted to win. And they're there. I mean, it's really in their hands now. They've hit the form you know, built the depth that they wanted to, and they're there. And now it's a matter of, you know, the players going out and executing. and taking that next step. So I think there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of energy. The good thing is there'd be no further injuries after the setback of losing Malcolm Marks and Makhazola Mapimpi. So they can pick whoever they want. They've got the players that they wanted. They've got the game plan in place. And it's now for the likes of England and potentially the All Blacks or Argentina to stop the Springbok machine, which is really, you know, rumbling along at a very nice clip.
Thanks for your great input, as always, Jacques. I'm hoping for a classic Springbok All Blacks showdown, and hopefully we'll be talking about that one next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks for your patience, Wes, hanging on the line there and listening in on our rugby conversation. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Trev. Always good to chat, man.
Drawing you into the conversation, switching to cricket. Now, the format of the Cricket World Cup currently on the go in India. It's a round-robin one. It features a 10-team league. The top four advance, of course, to the semi-finals. Now, that tells us that consistency, Wes, is the key. And with only 2 points for every win, you can fall off the pace very, very quickly in this tournament. I think, have we told our Proteas, Wes, is the question. Two top-notch wins, what is described as a near-perfect win over the Aussies, and then stumbling against the Netherlands. Boom, momentum lost. These Protea supporters with a kind of deflated feeling, doesn't it, Wes?
Yeah, it does, and rightly. I mean, you know, to beat Australia so convincingly and then literally in the next game to just kind of disintegrate the way they did, it's a real problem. And I think we knew going into the tournament that this was going to be a problem. The guys have got to learn to adjust, you know. I understand they want big scores, and I understand that they're playing more freely, which is great. You know, it's exciting cricket to watch. And, you know, against teams like New Zealand, India, Pakistan, you want big scores. But, you know, when you're playing the Netherlands, you don't really need to score 400 runs. It's just not necessary. And if they had just calmed down a little bit, and even after losing control with the ball the way that they did against the Netherlands, you know, they should have been able to pull it back with the bat. So I think the most concerning thing is listening to, you know, the players and the coach. Nobody really seems to have any reason for the fact that they are being as inconsistent as they are. But it is a big problem. They are at least acknowledging it, that it is an issue. And hopefully they fix that. They've got a lot more games to play. They can still get to the semis. But yeah, like you say, consistency is going to be key.
The format being what it is, and only 3 matches played out of a possible 9, it's not all doom and gloom. But one thing's for certain, there are glaring weaknesses to be urgently addressed for the Proteas. You've alluded briefly to them going forward. Bowling, especially at the death, Wes, is worrying me. The one that comes to mind. It was glaringly evident against the Netherlands again, and they did leak 300-plus runs with respect against Sri Lanka in the opening game. Your take on that?
I suppose one of the issues with the bowling attack is that we don't have as much depth as we would like. And it was a massive blow to lose Anrich Nokia going into the tournament. And I think maybe they haven't, you know, don't notice to the coaches and the management team. I'm sure they know what they're doing. But I don't think they've really adjusted their bowling attack having lost Nokia. So, you know, they're still trying to use Kutsia, who's really inexperienced. And I think that showed, you know, against the Netherlands. Playing in India, when we're playing against the bigger teams, I think they're probably better off just like getting rid of the idea that they need a lot of pace up front. They're not even using their fastest bowler as a frontline bowler at the moment. It's almost unnecessary to use him unless you're kind of rotating the players. And Indian conditions, especially against any team that might be dangerous, they really got to use their two spinners. We've got two good, consistent fast bowlers in Gidi and Khabada. And then Marco Janssen's really in good form. And if you add the two spinners to the back of that attack, I think that they will be far more useful, like you're saying, especially. So maybe a bit more rotation between the bowlers. And I think as unfortunate as it is that we've lost Nokia, they've just got to get rid of the idea that they need to replace him because they just can't, unfortunately. But they do have players who can compete at this level. And when they use two spin bowlers, I just feel like in Indian conditions, they're giving themselves a better chance.
Still a few positives to speak of, though, one being the lack of injuries in the first three encounters and, of course, being able to pick a team from the full spectrum of players available. But looking ahead now, Wes, it's England next. I'm going to ask you to put your selector's hat on briefly. Now, Coach Rob Walter said last week he isn't in the habit of making changes if they're not needed, but clearly now after the Netherlands shocker, he needs to take corrective action in certain areas, or do you just put your trust in the same core group again?
So Rob Walter has basically said that, like you say, it's unnecessary at this stage of the tournament to be rotating bowlers. He's using what he feels is his best attack, which is not, it's not an issue at this stage because they've had four full days rest between the games that they've played so far. But after the England game, the next couple of matches that they play, they're only going to have 2 days of rest. So, you know, I understand what they said, that obviously the players aren't hurt, nobody's injured. But we've already spoken about how long this tournament is. If you get to the final, you've got to play 11 matches. And at some point, they're going to have to rotate the bowlers somehow. I don't think that we'll see it against England, but we have got games where they probably can still do that, maybe against Bangladesh, you know, maybe against Afghanistan. We might see them rotating the players a bit more. But at this stage, it's brilliant that nobody's injured because we have that issue with depth. I don't know who they would bring in if we started picking up injuries. So, yeah, nobody's really been rested yet. But hopefully after this England game, I think we'll see them rotating the players a bit more.
Two big shocks, Afghanistan beating England and then brought down to earth with a thud by New Zealand, of course. The Proteas losing to the Dutch, lessons in consistency from India and New Zealand, starting to open up a useful gap already at the top of the table. Another issue I'd like to touch on very briefly, Wes, if we can wrap it up, if you would. The perceived lack of interest in neutral matches by the Indian cricket public. Again, the viability of the 50-over game under the microscope. But I do see now, of course, that T20 cricket also has been accepted into the Olympic family, and that's as from 2028 in Los Angeles. Just your views on that quickly?
Yeah, you know, it's great that I think cricket is being included in the Olympics. I'm a big fan of the Olympics, and, you know, it's going to be a different kind of format, and I believe there's only going to be six teams competing, so it'll be interesting to see how they do the qualifying for that sort of thing. But, you know, again, it's such a big issue to see the lack of interest, like you've said, Trev, in India. You would expect in India that they wouldn't have any issues filling stadiums for 50-over cricket. So that is a concern. It's a wide-open tournament. And, you know, I suppose India and New Zealand are in the driving seat at the moment. They're the only teams at this point who haven't lost a match, which is significant. And I think it's going to be wide open for those other two places in the semifinals. You know, we're not the only team that's lost a game that we shouldn't have lost. There's been quite a few surprises already, and we're probably going to see a few more. So, you know, hopefully that excitement, that battle for the semifinal places will draw more interest from people. But if something doesn't happen, I mean, if we get through this whole tournament, and let's say India gets knocked out at some point, and people aren't even interested in the final, it is kind of a death knell, I think, for 50-over cricket. So it's up to the players, it's up to the guys on the field to ensure that there's enough excitement to draw the crowds. But, yeah, I don't know. I suppose it gets to a point where if people want to watch 2020 cricket, then that's what they're going to watch. And if the game does go that way, I think it's unfortunate. But I suppose that's just the way the game's going.
Wes, thanks for the chat. Insightful, interesting as always to share your views with us. But don't go away. Stay on the line because you know what's coming next. It's our weekly Flop and Gold Star feature where we hail sporting excellence and we bash mediocrity. My flop of the week, in total contrast to last week, sadly I'm awarding it to the Proteas cricket team this week.
Ooh, you suck!
As I said earlier, so deflating after the highs of the first 2 weeks. They built up our expectations with two clinical performances. Then, boom, as we said, a defeat by second-tier Netherlands, a side stacked with South African-born players Nogal. And my gold star, that goes to Springbok Cheslin Kolbe. That perfectly timed charge down of Thomas Ramos's conversion in last weekend's quarterfinal against France. In the context of the game, it proved to be a golden moment when one considered that the Boks only won by a single point. Another example of Springbok innovation, perhaps. French supporters can argue till they blew in the face. That charge down was perfectly timed, and Colby was deemed to be onside right at the right moment. Jacques.
Yeah, Trevor, I think, you know, Wesley might agree with me as well. I think we're all in agreement this week. I think the flop is no doubt the Proteas. You know, there was nothing more deflating than that defeat. So I'm not going to say too much more on that. The Proteas are my flop. I'm just going to go a bit broader with my gold star and my top performer of the week. I'm going to go with the Springboks in total. You know, they were, you know, back under the gun early on in that match, conceded an early try, but they kept hitting back and they kept hitting back. And you know, after the 80 minutes, like you say, Colby's charged down, a couple of key interventions from Quagga Smith at the breakdown, and then Andre Pollard slotting that 52-meter penalty. So, you know, total wonderful performance from the Springboks. I'm giving it to them. It was a real crunch game against the hosts in a real cauldron of French rugby, and they pulled it through in the end.
Wes, how are you looking this week?
Yeah, we're all on the same page. I think this week is an easy one. You know, the Proteas were horrible. And I think specifically the bowlers, I feel like we just let it slip. We had control of that game and they just let it go. So that was really unfortunate. But we all know how much it lifts the spirit of our country when the Springboks win. They really are, you know, the heart of our nation at the moment in terms of sport. So the fact that they won such a thrilling game, you know, you've seen it. I think we've all been speaking about it since that match, and it's done great things for our country, and hopefully they keep it going.
And that's where we'll wrap it. Have a great sporting week with the Citizen as your companion, both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, thanks for joining us and sharing your wealth of sporting knowledge as usual. And also once again to our panelists on the Citizen Hotline, senior Citizen Sports journalist Wesley Botten. Wes, thanks again for joining us. My name's Trevor Cramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Click on Multimedia, and that's the subsection podcasts, or why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM. You'll also find the Talking Point video podcast now on the Citizen's YouTube channel. Go check it out and subscribe. Remember this, it's not the load that breaks you down, it's the way you carry it. Have yourself a great sporting week. From me, Trevor, cheers for now.